start the car and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
All right, second half of the program begins right now. Around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people where they are covering the stories that start in Dallas, Texas. Ari Temkin, 105.3 The Fan, is there. Ari, how are you, sir?
I'm great, sir, and how are you?
Doing as well as we can. I hope you and your family are safe and you know, are making it through these difficult times, my friend. We do have football going on. That's one of our lifebloods. And the Cowboys signing Alden Smith, tremendous talent. He's one of our own. He's a Kansas City kid from Raytown. Okay, I can't remember if it was Ray South or Raytown. He was a Blue Jay, right? Raytown, I think I remember that basketball uniform being blue, so he'd be Raytown.
Yeah, Raytown, Raytown Blue Jays, Raytown proper.
Okay, yeah, Raytown Blue Jays. Tell me, what's the reaction on this? As much as we're rooting for him and hope he's got his life together, it has been just one problem off the field after another for our man Alden.
Yeah, no question about it, sir. And I mean, it's been well documented. In his first three seasons, he had 42 sacks. He was an absolute monster. And then, you know, we found him more in a courtroom than we did on a football field after that, after his first three seasons. The reaction was, I mean, kind of like everybody else, surprised. Not really sure exactly where Alden Smith had been for the last 5 years since he last played in the National Football League in 2015. And I think the first thing that I noticed was Jay Glazer tweeted the news and also mentioned, you know, he's clean and sober now. What a tremendous opportunity here for him to turn his life around. And, you know, look, I mean, we've seen Jay Glazer beyond just breaking news. You know, he's a guy that's helped to rehab and helped to, you know, NFL players that seem to be on a trail that has them out of the league, he's helped to rehabilitate some of these guys. So, you know, you first see that, you think, oh, okay, maybe Glazer's been working with him. He got his fourth DUI in June of 2019 in the Kansas City area. And so my hope is that, you know, maybe that was the moment that he decided to, you know, maybe turn his life around a bit. And perhaps that's when he did go with Jay Glazer and perhaps others to help rehabilitate him and get him on the right track. But there's a lot of incentives in this deal for Alden Smith to be on the field and be productive. So I Cowboys look at this as a low risk with not much tied into him from a guaranteed standpoint unless he plays, with the potential for a high reward. But I don't think anybody's under the impression that even at this stage of his career, he's going to be that 42 sack guy in 3 years. But if he could become part of a rotational piece for them on their defensive line, you know, the additions of Poe, who obviously you guys in Kansas City are familiar with, and then Gerald McCoy and what they've been able to do through free agency, they're going to have a pretty good defensive line rotation.
All right, Amari Cooper getting chastised by Rex Ryan talking about him. What's the reaction? They listen, that deal, I get it. They thought he was great. He did everything, but man, it's like, what is it, like 3 or 4 times bigger than any other wide receiver contract that's been given out. Is there a feeling that the Cowboys grossly overpaid on this deal and there was really no market anywhere near this had they just left him out there on the open market for a little while?
Yeah, I'm not sure I could use the words that Rex Ryan used to describe Amari Cooper, but it was a weird word for him to use, considering if you know Amari Cooper at all, like, he's a really smart, thoughtful, interesting, introspective guy. I don't think that's a word I would ever use to describe him. Look, I think there's a couple of schools of thought on Amari Cooper. I mean, he's had 3,000-yard seasons in 4 years. He's a very productive receiver, and he's his best attribute, to me, is the most important attribute of a wide receiver, the ability to separate and create space. And he does that as good as anybody in the National Football League. The one thing with him is he does have, at times, a disappearing act. And I don't know that I'd say it, you know, it's against the best competition or in the biggest games, because when he came over to Dallas, he played his best in the biggest game. So, you know, he does have some weird home road splits, and that's inexplicable. We talked to him throughout the year, this past year, about, you know, what is it? And he certainly couldn't explain it. And again, this is a very introspective guy. There was the reputation he had on his way out of Oakland that he didn't care about football, he didn't love football. I mean, I've seen no indication of that. Sometimes guys that are that smart and that introspective, I think, can be labeled that way. And I don't think that's an appropriate labeling for a guy that's smart and a really good football player. Now, was it too much money to spend? I don't think so, given the market for that position and especially the importance of having receivers in a passing league.
What was the market? Like, who am I missing that got anything even remotely close to that on the free agent market?
Well, I think, what is he, the second highest paid wide receiver in football now at $20 million a year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the market reportedly was that the Washington Redskins were ready to make him the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League. So, you know, the Cowboys believed that they were negotiating against the Redskins, who were going to pay him more money than the Cowboys were willing to pay him. And the report states that he decided on the Cowboys despite the fact, and this is from multiple sources, and I've heard similar things from people I talked to, that he took less to come to the Cowboys. The Cowboys were not going to go beyond $20 million, and that if he wanted to make the most possible money on this deal he could have, he would have went to the Redskins.
Well, I think. Listen, that's the most gullible collection of goofs I've ever heard of in my life. The next biggest deal on the market was Robbie Anderson, 2 for $20 million. You could have given him 3 for $30 million. And blown away the offer that was out there from Carolina, and gotten at worst what, 80%, 90% of Amari Cooper for 20-30% of the cost. I don't know. I think the Cowboys. I think the Redskins. Maybe the Redskins would have. But outbidding the dumbest guy in the room, which is Daniel Snyder, is generally not a good practice. Usually, if he's the only other guy bidding, you should be like, wait a minute. Why am I bidding against this guy? Because he screws everything up. I don't know. I don't get it. That deal to me is going to end up being looks like it could end up being a mess. But hey, I keep asking people who's the Super Bowl, and Cowboys Chiefs is a real popular Super Bowl that everybody says. So we'll see. I hear the Cowboys a lot. We'll see if they end up making it happen. How about Mark Cuban? Mark Cuban was a guy that at one point was really optimistic about the NBA getting started up again, and now he seems to be backing off, and now it seems almost like he's throwing in the towel. What's the vibe around the Mavericks owner and whether or not we're going to have any NBA finish this year?
Yeah, no kidding. He was probably the most boisterous in terms of this thing getting done, and even, you know, kind of zero in on a date. And, you know, now he's looking less and less like that's likely. And I think the news from Woj that they're trying to get a horse competition going from Zoom is the latest indication of the NBA trying to salvage something from their television contract that would resemble some kind of money and value for their partners. Look, I think, you know, Cuban is always, we're used to in Dallas, Cuban being the most active in terms of, you know, being out there from NBA owners and, you know, having his opinion heard. And this, I think, more than anything, was just one of the most exciting Dallas Mavericks seasons in a very long time, with Luka coming into a very highly anticipated season with Kristaps Porzingis, and they're playing really well. You know, this was the stretch of the year where we were most excited to see what this duo could do, especially given that they've not played a full season together, any games together. And so it's kind of interesting to see, as the race has sort of started to materialize the West and how good the West was, what it would look like. So, you know, certainly disappointing for the Mavs' vantage point, as it is for most teams' vantage point. But, I think Cuban's sort of mysteriously jumping out of the conversation gives us pretty good indication that they have, in their meetings, have not really had any discussions about this thing picking up anytime soon.
All right, Ari Temkin in Dallas. You're the man, my friend. Stay safe, stay healthy. Have yourself a great week.
You as well, sir, and same to you and your family. Be well.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina.
Talk to Travis Hancock, WFNZ, in Charlotte, North Carolina. Travis, how are you, man?
Good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. We've been talking a lot. You know, the president spoke with the commissioners of all the leagues. He's optimistic that we're going to have football. Dabo Swinney, who's got maybe the front runner to win the national championship this year, is quoted as saying, we will play football on time. College football will get started on time in August. Does everybody around those parts share that kind of optimism?
No, because we're not doctors. We're not scientists. We don't know what's going to happen. Look, if we're wrong about that or Dabo is right, that's fine. That's what we all want. So months down the line, if we look back and say, well, Dabo was right, that's great. But Dabo was a big discussion on our show today. because Dabo talks a lot. Dabo's always a topic. And it felt like his words this time just came across as really tone deaf. Look, we like positivity right now. We need that. But the whole thing of the audio that we played of him saying it was, I'm trying to get my team ready for Georgia Tech. I'm not worried about all the other stuff. He was talking like he's getting ready for, you know, Dabo uses things for motivation. It's like he's using this to, like, motivate his team. It's like him versus the virus when it's like the world is in a pandemic and it's not football talk time. We need you to be real. Tell your fans to get inside. They listen to you. Don't act like everything's all good or everything's going to be good in time because they listen to that. Nick Saban can't go out there and say, everyone, go live your lives and whatever, because they're going to do what he says. So the coaches have to be really careful with these football fans on what they say because they're revered and they listen to them a lot.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%, and these are guys that really are some of the most powerful people when it comes to their day-to-day lives in this country, right? There are checks and balances in the federal government, right? There are people that government officials, senators, congressmen, governors have to answer to. There's almost no one a college football coach, particularly a championship-caliber college football coach, has to answer to, and therefore they just don't know how to deal when they're told no. And right now, the country is saying no, and they don't know how to react to it. I have
like
the same
Saban
reaction
can't
to
come
it.
Out. Right, yeah. I agree. Nick Saban can't come out this fan base and say, y'all, this is and use football terms and talk in that way. Nick Saban came out and basically said, stay home. What? A lot of the Alabama fans are going to go, well, Nick told us to stay home, so we're going to watch football. So you've got to be careful with your words because they follow your example. And Dabo's always got that us against the world, little old Clemson, little old Dabo mentality. He doesn't realize sometimes you're not little old Clemson. You're not little old Dabo anymore. You're one of the most prominent figures in all of sports. So when you speak, it matters. So you can't just say these things and then, you know, get taken aback by the backlash. You have a prominent voice in sports. Be careful with what you say sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt. Patrick Tate. Gonna go, you know, grad transfer, one of the top grad transfers out there, gonna go to Duke. Then he decommits from Duke. And then 3 days later, he recommits to Duke. Like, do I need to start looking for the Nike guy who had the bag of cash that made this thing come together? Make up your mind. Like, what's the deal here?
I think that playing time is a question because they have two freshmen. He's the Columbia grad transfer. So there are two freshman bigs coming in. I heard last week, because I'm a Duke fan, so I follow the stuff relatively closely, that he wanted to, like, Syracuse came in and flipped him, I guess. I guess that's what the word was. And then Syracuse gets a grad transfer or a transfer commit, whatever it was, from the kid from Illinois this week. So did he take his spot? And then, you know, it's just, you know, it's the world of college basketball. Look, I've been watching so many old games lately because YouTube has every Final Four and championship game ever, basically, you ever want to watch. The sport is just so much better back in the 80s and 90s than it is now. So the free agent aspect, the transfers, and the one-and-done rules, it's maddening. It's hard to follow. Like, you and I right now are talking about a grad transfer from Columbia. That shows you the state of college basketball in 2020. We love the sport, right? But it's like, would we be talking about this years ago? Would he impact stuff? You know, it's just the sport's not the same, and I think an example of that is talking about grad transfers basically being free agents right now.
Well, I can tell you as a Syracuse grad, if they backed off this kid who's like, what, 6'10", I think, because they're signing a 6'2 guard from Illinois, then they don't know what they're doing. And my friends who think Jim Boeheim has lost his mind are accurate if that's where he kind of changed things up there. But like you said, who the hell knows, right? How the hell do we know? We have no idea what the hell's going on with all these things.
And real quick, what's frustrating, too, about the sport is here in the ACC, we know that Duke and Carolina will be back, and we know Florida State, Virginia is Virginia, but the ACC was way down last year because they didn't have a lot of help below them, right? The middle of the conference really fell off. So then Virginia Tech loses their best freshman, Landers Nolly, transfers. Pittsburgh starting to build under Jeff Capel. They lose Trey McGowan, one of their best players. He's gone, transfers. Your guy at Syracuse, Elijah Hughes, goes to the pros. When they could have been really special next year offensively with Joe Girard, Buddy Boeheim, and him, they could have been one of the best offensive teams in the country. So it's the middle-tier teams in these conferences. Once the players start to go, it really affects the depth of the conference and the sport as a whole.
No doubt. Real quick, we got any idea what Carolina's going to do at number seven?
Marty Herney spoke today, the general manager, and it seems like defense is going to be the pick probably. Derek Brown of Auburn, the interior defensive lineman, gets mocked there a lot because they gave up 5.2 yards against the run last year. I like Isaiah Simmons, the freakish defensive player from Clemson who plays safety, slot corner, linebacker, and pass rusher. Mm-hmm. Matt Rhule talked about positionless football being a thing, so he fits into what they want. He started to fall into mocks. I'm not sure why exactly. It's smokescreen season. I like Isaiah Simmons, and a lot of the mocks like Derek Brown. That's good, too. I think defense is probably the way to go because they addressed a lot of offensive needs with Robbie Anderson that you mentioned before with the previous guest, Teddy Bridgewater. So they've addressed some offense. They've really got a – this defense could be historically bad. Like, they play Mahomes this year in Kansas City. They play Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. They play at Minnesota. Obviously, they play at the Saints, at the Falcons, at the Bucks. Like, they may give up 60 points in a game this year. I mean, that's how bad the depth chart is on defense. So they've got – I mean, I'm not even joking. Mahomes might put up like a Kansas basketball score on the Panthers this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch, no doubt. All right, great stuff. We always appreciate it. Travis Hancock there in Charlotte. Stay safe, my friend. Have a great week.
Hey, you too. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's raining in Baltimore.
Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore, Maryland's next. Glenn, how are you, sir?
Seren, I'm great, bud. I hope you are. And if he happens to be listening, happy birthday to Paul Rudd.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, KC guy.
Yeah.
Maybe he is back here. You know, things a little cooler in Kansas City than they are in Los Angeles or New York, wherever he might reside with his movie career. So thank you. All right, let me real quick on basketball. Mark Turgeon had a team that looked like it could do some damage. Does it get any worse? You know, Bill Self, I've said, you know, the year he had his best NBA talent, Joel Embiid's back goes out at the end of the year, and they go into the tournament without him. Now he's the 1-1 definitively that he could have lost in the first round of the Big 12, and the season gets sacked. And I'm like, wow. I mean, as much success as he's had, he's also been pretty damn unlucky. Turgeon finally had a year. He's co-Big Ten champs. Maybe a chance to get everybody off his back, his best-looking tournament team, and it's gone. What does this do for him and his future?
Saran, it's really tough, man, because there's a fan base that and you and I have talked about this, right? Like, there's a lot to like about Mark Turgeon. His teams have never been bad. They've done a lot of things. The one thing that's missing is they had never won a meaningful game in the postseason. And it just hasn't happened in a decade. And you're right, this was probably his best chance. Now, they might not have been trending in the right direction down the backside of the season, and that maybe makes this worse because I think it leads to a portion of the fan base that says, well, they would have just lost again in the postseason anyway because of how they were playing, which is wildly unfair to a very good team that probably had some minutes issues and would have been well served by getting a couple of days of rest leading into the tournament. So it's hard to figure out what it would have been, and it's really bad timing because they're obviously going to lose Anthony Cowan. They're losing Jalen Smith almost certainly to the NBA. You know, they're not going to come back with a loaded roster next season, and it looks like the school is going to just sort of say, okay, we're going to buy in, but at some point they're going to have to give him a contract. It's a really awkward spot for everybody involved, and it's the type of conversation they don't really want to have publicly because clearly all of these conversations are shadowed by, you know, an epidemic that's going on. So it's very awkward. It's an uncomfortable conversation. I think the fact that he was able to at least get that share of the Big Ten title does prevent there from being more wolves out and people that are more willing to buy into the idea that he might be able to keep doing this and keep adding on the fly in the coming season.
Yeah, I think the actually not having the tournament probably helped more guys than it hurt because everyone has high expectations, right? So everybody who bombed in the first round, second round, anyone who didn't get in the tournament, that's all get erased. Anyone who was a bubble team can sit and tell their fan base.
They
were in, but the guys that had a chance to really make some noise, those are the ones that it really ended up costing. All right, let's talk about the
run. Go ahead, sir.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, if he makes a run towards the Elite Eight, the Final Four, it completely rewrites everything about Mark Turgeon and the University of Maryland. I mean, everything is off his back just by one run, which was entirely possible. So, yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's, for some people, it benefits them. It's almost like this, you know, if you're North Carolina, it's literally like the season never happened. Whereas here, I mean, it's crushing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's turn to the Ravens before I interrupt you again. Hey, we're all broadcasting from at home, so there's a bit of a delay, so I apologize for everybody out there that's listening going, what the hell is he keep stepping on him for? There is a little bit of a delay, so I'm trying to stay out of the way. But I am interested in what the Ravens have done. Considered to be the team with the best roster in football, and I assume they lose Pierce, but they trade for Calais Campbell. They signed Derek Wolfe, so that seems to be the one place where you're like, well, they backed up the truck a little bit. Not so much. I guess the feeling is that this is a better version of the Ravens with the draft still to come, right?
Yeah, it is. The question becomes, was this the best way to go about improving themselves? I think the big thing that everybody points at is what happened against Derrick Henry in the playoffs. And to some extent, no doubt, that was a big story. They had a couple games last season where they struggled against the run. The 49ers were able to have success to the outside. The Browns had success, but in fairness, that was a game where Brandon Williams didn't play. So they want to get better against the run, and it's a good thought, but I think that most of us are assuming this is going to come down to Ravens, Chiefs again in the AFC next year, and is this the best way to get better in order to go beat Pat Mahomes? Or did they need to load up more on the offensive side of the ball and try to get some more weapons for Lamar Jackson, expecting that the likelihood is they're going to have to be able to, you know, outscore the Chiefs if that's what it comes down to? So we'll see. I do think they're a better team. I certainly think that they added some nice pieces on the defensive line. There's good there, but I think the question becomes, you're losing Marshall Yanda, so that's already a massive hole that you're going to have to deal with. And you've done nothing. You lost your second tight end in Hayden Hurst, who was a really productive player for them a year ago. They have lost, and they've added nothing on the offensive side of the ball when they're likely to have to run into the juggernaut that is Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs again next year.
Yeah, no, I get it. I will say this along the Calais Campbell and Wolf. I mean, I don't think Wolf will be healthy come playoffs, right? But then again, he's older and the injuries are starting to pile up. But if we get an abbreviated season, he may not have to play a whole year. But neither one of them cost much, right? So I listen, Calais Campbell cost the most, but he's the kind of athlete that I would think that can hold up and has been playing at a high level according to all the metrics. So I see what it is they're trying to do. We'll see where they go in the draft, if they go offense, all over the draft. Antonio Brown brought in for a workout.
Yeah.
Come on. Really? Really?
Right. So, okay. So this is – it's an awkward spot. They didn't bring him in. He worked out with Lamar Jackson in Florida. Marquise Brown, the Ravens' top wide receiver, is cousins with Antonio Brown. They're all from the same sort of area in Florida where Lamar Jackson's from. So it's not stunning that they would find themselves working out together at some point. It's an awkward spot because the Ravens privately would be saying, look, we're not interested in Antonio Brown. We're not going that route. Forget about it. But then today, they didn't publicly deny it. They had their, you know, pre-draft press conference or whatever you want to call these Zoom meetings today. And it came up during the course, and they sort of said they just didn't want to talk about it, which I get they don't want themselves to be tied to Antonio Brown, but by doing that, they're also not denying it, which then opens up a can of worms that's great for us in radio. It's an awkward look, but there's logical reasons why, even if the Ravens want nothing to do with Antonio Brown, Lamar Jackson geographically and because of familiar reasons when it comes to Marquise Brown would be spending time with him, I still don't think that this is something that the Ravens would actually end up doing.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like a John Harbaugh type of move when it's all
no.
Glenn Clark, great stuff, buddy. Stay healthy there in Baltimore, and have yourself a great week, my friend.
Same to you, Saran. Thanks, bud.
Pete Fox, NBC Sports Radio in Los Angeles, California. Pete, how are you, sir?
Feeling good, my man.
Let's start with Kobe Bryant to the Hall of Fame. This surprises no one, but it rounds out what may be the greatest Hall of Fame class in the history of the NBA, right? In the history of the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, definitely a star-studded lineup. You look at the announcement, as you said, it's not a surprise to anybody. But, you know, you think about it and go, does this make the Kobe Bryant death even more tragic that, he died the way he did just before going into the Hall of Fame? I mean, I guess you could look at it and argue that point, that it makes it even sadder. I mean, an already sad, sad story. Or you could say, look, he knew he was going to the Hall of Fame. This is not a surprise to anybody. So I think it's just part of the entire sad, tragic happenings of the end of his life, you know. So everyone is obviously excited about that. And this kind of spawns a lot of conversations when we don't have any other sports, you know, like who are the top five Lakers of all time, and pick your starting five. And, you know, that game's being played a lot right now with regard to what's happening around here, because we have no sports, and Kobe's kind of a topic of conversation again.
All right, let's turn our attention to football. Are the Chargers going to be the ultimate destination for Cam Newton?
You know, that's been discussed a fair amount. It seems like it would be a fairly decent fit because he's a mobile quarterback, and we understand that the Chargers coaching staff likes mobile quarterbacks. We're still hearing a kind of across the board when people are throwing up mock drafts that Justin Herbert is the guy they're going to go get with that number six pick. And then you look at Tyrod, and, you know, again, they've all been very complimentary of Tyrod Taylor. They feel like he can run this offense. They beefed up the offensive line to a certain extent, adding Trey Turner in exchange for Russell Okung. So they got a little bit younger there. Their defense was already very solid, just very injured last year. So I would say, yeah, that maybe Jameis Winston or Cam Newton could be a possibility for them if the price isn't too terribly high.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, having competition there is not a bad thing. When I like Tyrod Taylor. I think he's underrated, but not great. Right? There's no ceiling left there. He'll do a serviceable job of running the offense. But if you've got an opportunity to get some competition, I would think you'd go for it. Is it quarterback at number six? Do they move up and go get Tua? Do they go to three or even two? You know, the Redskins seem locked at taking another Buckeye for Daniel Snyder, but do they move up and make a play for Tua? Is that being talked about?
We haven't heard that at all. I mean, this conversation about what to do with the draft pick for quite a while has been the name Justin Herbert. It just kept coming up. And even when we were speculating before anybody had thought about it, it felt like that was kind of the best fit for them. So, you know, there hasn't been a lot of discussion about Tua other than the question mark hanging over his head regarding the hip and the injury and how healthy is he and so forth and so on. So it feels pretty solid right now that, look, he's in a conversation for sure, but he comes kind of after Justin Herbert, and a Jordan Love out of Utah State is another name that has come up a fair amount when talking about what the Chargers are going to do with that pick.
All right. How about the Rams logo? Listen, I get it. I mean, I think it looks kind of goofy. The best thing I saw on Twitter was, this looks like the logo of those teams in movies that they use when they can't actually get approval for real NFL logos. And I was like, that's pretty good, right? But I think like every new logo kind of looks that way, right? That's what all the XFL uniforms look like as well, right? It's just like they're classics. But one of the most classic uniforms is the Rams. I don't really give a flying crap what they do with their logo, but would they please just go back to the blue and yellow uniforms? They're some of the greatest uniforms in the history of professional sports. Please tell me they're going to do that and not try to reinvent the wheel.
They have said those are the primary colors. Of course, they came up with creative names like California Soul or something like that for the blue and the yellow, right? But definitely it's blue, a lighter shade of blue, not that deeper, darker blue that they had in St. Louis. So it's the lighter, almost a royal blue, similar to what the Dodgers and Royals have. And then this kind of brightish yellow. But, you know, I don't think people are terribly upset about that at all. It's really the logos. And the one with the L.A. and the horn kind of making a reverse C out of, or a C out of the right leg of the A is the one that's got everyone kind of twisted up, because it looks like the Chargers logo. Like, if you weren't paying a whole lot of attention, you could think that is a bolt as well as a horn. So that's got people a little bent out of shape. And then the other thing, and I didn't actually see this, tell me if you did, but some of the complaints about the Ram head was that it looked like the male anatomy, the head of the male anatomy, if you will. And I was like, I don't see that, but I guess, okay, you could kind of, you know, twist your mind up to see that it looks moderately offensive in that way. So, you know, Eric Dickerson went to bat for the fans, to the team. I mean, he works for the team. He's got some glorified title, like vice president of promotional activities or something. And he went to bat for the fans because he doesn't like the logo either. And they were all, Kevin Demoff just said, sorry, sticking with it, here it is. And then he even went as far as to say that he would go read these mean tweets on his Twitter feed if they raised $2 million for COVID-19 at a telethon that they recently did. And they raised $2.2 million. So he read a bunch of these these tweets, you know, similar to what you read, or one of them that I thought was funny was it looked like it came from a freshman drafting class, or you know, that type of whatever that class is called, where you're designing things. So there's been a lot of vitriol about this logo for sure, but it is what it is, so we all better just get used to it.
I Googled it real quick. Number one, I don't see the male anatomy, and two, I saw one that was quite creative that has the word blah with the A with the horn coming through back to the L. It has the LA in the middle of the word blah. I thought that was great.
Right.
All right. Last thing, President Trump meets with all the commissioners. He says it, you know, wants to kick the economy back off with sports getting back in August and looking forward to the NFL, packed stadiums, and the NFL being played. The governor of California immediately responds, don't see it happening, not in this state. Three teams reside in California, two in the city you're in right now. What was the reaction to the combination of the president's comments and then the follow-up from the governor?
Well, the comments from the president about, you know, anything, like for example, his big thing is, oh, we're going to have Easter in, what, you know, 2 weeks, a week. It's just laughable, really. On the other side of the spectrum, I mean, I think Governor Newsom is being precautious, but maybe excessively to a certain extent, because in California, the numbers have not flattened or started to subside yet. They're still going up. And from that perspective, he's taken, like, for example, in our particular county and city, there is a statute that if you go outside without a face mask on, you can get a violation. They're not going to lock you up and throw you in jail, but you have to wear a face mask. And that kind of preventative medicine is really going to, is the only thing that's going to keep it from going up and subsiding. So he's not trying to be overly optimistic, I think is what it, you know, looks like at this point from his perspective. So of course he can always backtrack. He can always reverse course and say, all right, things have leveled off. We're getting better more than we're getting worse. So let's get back to business as usual. But again, nobody knows. So I think he's just kind of trying to not get people too overly excited about things being back to normal, or, you know, in the next week or two, like certain other officials.
All right. Great stuff, Pete. You're always the best, man. We appreciate it. Stay healthy, my friend. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You as well, guys. Take care. Thanks a lot.
Feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer, and did they ever take care of me over the weekend? Whoo boy. How many times since 1976 have the number one and number two teams in the AP poll met in the championship game?
Ooh, since 76, you said?
Yeah, because it happened in 75, so it's from 76 to now. How many times has it been number one versus number two for all the marbles?
I think KU was number four, even though they were the betting favorite to win it in 08. Memphis, I think, was one, but I think that was 1-4. 1-2. Boy, not very often. It'd have to be 1-1s, right? It'd have to be a 1 against a 1.
Mm-hmm.
So probably. I mean, theoretically, I guess a Gonzaga could have been 2 and been a 2 seed or something like that. I'm going to say twice.
It has happened once.
Wow. When was it?
2005, when number 1 Illinois lost to number 2 North Carolina in St. Louis.
Ah, that's right. Did Illinois only have one loss?
Yep. They were unbeaten until I think they lost either in the very end of the regular season or maybe in their, if the Big Ten had a tournament in 2005. I think they did. They lost. They were like 27-0 at one point and then lost very late in the year.
Yeah. That was the Darren Williams, Luther Head.
Mm-hmm. D. Brown.
D. Brown. Yep. Illinois team coached by Bruce Weber.
Yep.
Ah.
Weppers. How about that?
A little bit of a callback there with the – not really, but sounded good. Listen, County Road Ice House and all three Joe's Kansas City locations, County Road Ice House, their sister restaurant in the P&L, and all three Joe's locations are open for carryout. They'll bring it right to the curb. You call in your order. They'll give you a pickup time when you arrive. You give them your name, and they bring you your order. It is all good to go. Go to joeskc.com mm-hmm. to get that, joeskc.com, or, of course, countyroadicehouse.com. You can reach the County Road Ice House at 816-399-4967. For the original Joes, it's 913-722-3366. At 119th and Stringline Road, 913-782-6858. And for my Joes, at 117th and Row, it's 913-338-5151. You can get all those numbers, though, at joeskc.com and at countyroadicehouse.com. Remember, all their sanitary and hygiene food practices are still in effect, and even more so right now. But they are so good at everything that they do at Joe's. All the food protocols are in effect, and they are ever vigilant all the time, 365 days a year. Just absolutely the best in the business, and nothing has changed. And Curtis, I got food for a weekend on Friday. That's the way to do it, man.
Yeah, I got the number one, which is a pound of meat. I got the burn-ins. You get a slab of ribs and then 2-pint sides. So I got the dirty rice and the chicken, the smoked chicken gumbo. I also got a regular rocket pig on top of it. So I had the rocket pig on Friday. I had the burn-ins on Saturday, and I had the ribs last night.
You know what I had on Friday?
And you get a bottle of sauce.
You know what I had on Friday? Tuna noodle casserole.
Strong.
It was really good, but like it feels to me like Easter's been going on for about 6 years, or Lent has been going on for about 6 years, and I would have killed for some Joe's. My wife makes a great tuna noodle casserole. I'm not hating on it at all.
Yeah, she makes a great everything.
Wonderful.
Man.
She does. She's a wonderful, wonderful cook. Great woman all around. Man, I could have used some Joes. I seriously could have used some Joes. Our thanks to all the guys on the 2-minute drill. I want to go back to a couple of things. One, Alden Smith. Man, I'm rooting for you. I'm praying for you, kid. I definitely hope that all that's true, that he is, you know, he's sober. He's got all the issues in his life in order, and he is ready to go play football and play it at a high level, something I know he has a passion for and that he's really, really good at, and that he hasn't squandered his entire career. You couldn't root any more for him. Good or bad that it's not Kansas City? Just not Kansas City. Take that. If somebody said it's not going to be the Chiefs, is that good or bad for Alden Smith, the person?
I think it's probably good.
Me too.
Yeah, I don't think the hometown situation, still too many people, too many hangers-on as professional athletes have, particularly if they're in the hometown. Get them away from, and Dallas, Texas is not, you know, it's not South Florida or the Pacific Northwest. He's still within, a short trip. But yeah, I think it's probably best to be here, to be out of here. And
yeah,
and
I think because then he can come back here and, in his own neighborhood, the guys who went to high school with him play ball against him, they know who he is. But, he's just a big guy walking around town for most people.
Yep.
Right. Most people couldn't identify Alden Smith walking around on the streets. So he gets a chance to just come back and hopefully have some security. Like I've always said about, Bubba Starling, I really was hoping somebody else would draft him so that you could come home and still be a hometown hero and not a hometown disappointment if his career doesn't turn out the way people want it to. And to have that sanctuary where you're still loved, you're still one of us, and remember when you were great here. And I think Alden Smith can have that and then go play ball and be successful someplace else and have the pressures of being a star somewhere else as opposed to his hometown. But the other side of me is like, well, he couldn't make it work out west. Maybe what he needed was to be home and have a closer, security or a closer, close-knit community right here behind him. Maybe that's what was missing, and maybe it would have been better. I don't know. Whatever he needs, I hope he's found it, and I wish him nothing but success.
And even if he doesn't go on to success in the NFL, if they somehow have camp or whatever, if he never plays a game for the Dallas Cowboys, if he is clean and sober and lives the rest of his life and doesn't hurt himself or anybody else and everything goes great from then, I think it's something of a success story, because he was going down a path that I felt was going to end up with us having to talk about him not being here anymore.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And the fact that he seemingly has gotten himself to a point where no longer seems like a probability, but would be a surprise. I hope things continue to go onward and upward from him. He's 30. He has so many years of his life ahead of him. Let's hope he lives a long, prosperous life and has everything great going from here on out, regardless of whether he plays another down of football again.
Yeah, I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you. That's absolutely what's most important. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. I want to talk a little bit more about Dabo Swinney, talk a little bit about Antonio Brown, talk a little bit more about Amari Cooper's contract. That's next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
He's really good. And I don't know if you know this, he's kind of a colorful fellow that also creates some interest that makes it fun.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Don't forget, Easter right around the corner, prime rib roast dinner from Hereford House. It is $159, serves between 4 and 6. Get a 5-pound prime rib roast, slow roasted with Hereford House signature seasoning, their creamy horseradish au jus, house salad, dinner rolls, mashed potatoes, sauteed green beans, their famous carrot cake. There are no discounts or substitutions. It's a package deal. And, of course, they're serving curbside at your neighborhood Hereford House. They got specials all this week. Tomorrow's special, the barbecue family meal. Go to herfordhouse.com, and you can see their wonderful menu. Their curbside menu is available there. If you want, you can go straight to it at herfordhouse.com/pickup-menu. But herfordhouse.com, herfordhouse.com, if you're spelling challenged. As I am, that's where you can go. And don't forget their new hours right now, noon to 7. But that great Hereford House, great Hereford House steaks and steak soup and roasts and everything they have, it's still there, man. Get it, Hereford House. Great, great local company, locally owned and operated. Hereford House has you covered here for Easter and every day this week. Go to herfordhouse.com to find the location nearest you and to see that great curbside menu. Let's talk about Amari Cooper, 5 years for $100 million. Do you notice in talking to Ari, who's our man, one of our, you know, long time ago, Ari's what is he, 60? He's an intern way back in the day.
Yeah.
Now he's probably in his mid-30s now, probably.
I'd say he's probably right? Mid to late 30s, 30.
Pretty sure Ari's my age. I think he's like right around 36.
36, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it sounds about right. You know, I mentioned like, hey, how about the price on Cooper? I'm like, 5 for $100, like nobody else is signing it. 3 for $27 is the second biggest wide receiver deal. Right now, I realize Cooper doesn't count because he didn't get the free agency they signed him. But 5 for $100 for Amari Cooper, I think that's going to end up being an albatross. Am I wrong?
I doubt it. I mean, you usually aren't wrong on this type of thing. That is a lot of money moving forward. A lot of these things are going to be more than they're worth. But 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns last year. He's been a guy who's found the end zone consistently through his career. He's only 26, be 26 coming up in June. So I could see it not being.
Can I ask, define finding the end zone consistently?
33 touchdowns in 5 seasons.
Yeah.
He's
consistently mediocre. Right? 6, 5, 7, 7, 8. 8's his career high. Sammy Watkins has an 8 touchdown season.
Yeah.
One.
That may be over.
No, actually two. He's got an 8 and a 9, doesn't he? Didn't Sammy have 8 with the Rams and he had 9 in his rookie or second year?
Sammy had 6 his first year and 9 his second year and 8. And so, yeah, so he has an 8 and a 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has 31 in 4 seasons or 6 seasons. So he has 2 fewer in 1 more season, but.
I mean, I just – am I the only one that's like, really? I mean, I get it. Amari Cooper, you gave up a first-round pick for him. Super. He played well for you. He played great down the stretch for the Cowboys in 18. And in 19, he had 79 for 1189 and 8. Like, that's a good year. But it's not like you can't find that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. There's six guys have had more touchdowns in the last 5 years than him. You should be able to find that for – less than that.
Who are the six guys?
Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Devontae Adams, Odell Beckham Jr., Mike Evans, Doug Baldwin.
He has one more touchdown than Tyreek Hill, who has one less season in the league.
Doug Baldwin?
Yeah, he has 34.
Like Amari Cooper, out of that list of guys you just read me off, he seems more Doug Baldwin than any of the other guys.
Yeah, and Baldwin didn't play last year.
And Doug Baldwin still had more than him.
Yeah, he still has one more.
Listen, Amari Cooper's a good player. I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying 5 for 100, these are the deals you don't do.
Yeah.
It's just like if it's going to be 6 for like 150 for Chris Jones, you don't do it. Like that's just too much money for one player. As soon as they're hurt, that's so much of your cap sitting on the sideline. Mm-hmm. This one will blow up in the Cowboys' face, in my opinion. All right, we'll take a break. We'll talk about that with Eric Eager, Pro Football Focus. He's coming up next.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, Tom Dempsey passed away on Saturday. He was the first to kick a 63-yard field goal. How many have made one that far since then? Brought to you by Jazz.